Welcome back into First Draft, and it's great to be back after a one-show hiatus. I am Field Yates. I'll tell you where I was in just a moment, but he, of course, is Mel Kiper Jr. And Mel, I did get a couple of messages saying maybe Daniel should just take over that spot full-time, but I appreciate you allowing me back here on the good old First Draft.
Yeah, Daniel did a phenomenal job. There's no doubt about it. It was so much fun answering questions, fielding questions, the Q&A. I love all that stuff, Field. But it's great to have you back safe and sound, back at the helm. And we got a lot to cover, a lot of ground to cover. Free agency has been starting fast and furious as usual. You were out in Eugene at Pro Day. Yep. So a lot to cover there. I have a mock draft coming out on Tuesday. I've been making calls, working on that, looking at tape. Got some highlighted guys that are a little under the radar. So we've got a ton of ground to cover today and not a lot of time to do it, Field.
So let's get right into it, Mel. I will just quickly recap Oregon's Pro Day, which is where I was. It took place on Tuesday, so I traveled all day Monday to get there. For those that haven't lived in Connecticut before, I can confirm that it is very difficult to get anywhere in the country, especially when Eugene, Oregon is about as remote as Hartford, Connecticut often feels. So long day to get out there, but totally worth it, Mel. And I think my feeling on Pro Days probably aligns with yours. We're not going to look too deeply into how quarterbacks throw on the field. Generally speaking, we'd like it to look like it did during the college process, and it did for Bo Nix. No surprise. Very accurate, Mel. 77.45% completion percentage last year. Highest in FBS history. Bo looked sharp on the field during the Pro Day. They charted him at 62 of 68. With three drops, so really three off-the-mark passes. That's what you expect from a guy with that kind of accuracy during his Oregon tenure. Looked sharp, throwing the football down the field as well. But I would say more than anything, Mel, what I took away from my time at Oregon Pro Day is how equipped people around the Oregon program feel that Bo Nix is to be the CEO of a franchise. Because as we all know, it's not just the quarterback on the field. There's the quarterback off the field, Mel. So while I had a sense of the football character going into the Pro Day, it became that much more clear how mature and how ready Bo is to shoulder the responsibility of being an NFL quarterback.
Yeah, he went through a lot at Auburn. Obviously, his father, Patrick Nix, and to go to Auburn and not have it work out, and then go to Oregon and have it really come together with Dan Lanning out there and have two great years. The kid battled adversity, and certainly nothing in the NFL is going to affect him mentally. Physically, he has a good arm, not a great one, and I don't think air has ever produced a first-round draft choice, so I'm not going to get excited about Pro Days, Field, for quarterbacks, but basically, I think it's getting to know the kids, be around players, and being around coaches and get the feel for what they think. As you said, is he the CEO? Is he the alpha? Is he the leader? Is he a guy that galvanizes? Is he a guy that everybody gravitates to? All those things intangible wise that are critical for a quarterback beyond out there, shooting hoops against air, basically, Right. So I could look pretty good out there too, but I'm not an NBA prospect. But, give me nobody guarding me. I can hit a few threes.
Yeah, I know you can, Mel.
And air it out a little bit. But the bottom line is, Field, we have to kind of sift through Pro Days and how much do you factor them in? How much do you let it affect where you think a player will go? And I'll ask you this. Where do you feel come April 25th, 26th, 27th, particularly 25th, 26th, so that's day one and day two, where do you feel right now Bo Nix is going to come off the board? How high could he go? And how did you affect your rating based on the Pro Day?
All right, so I'm going to timestamp this because, as we all know, during free agency, things can happen really fast. It's 10:49 a.m. Eastern time on Thursday, March 14th. I think the beginning range for Bo Nix is as early as pick 12, Mel, because it goes back to something that we have discussed many times over with the Denver Broncos. Right now, they have no quarterback other than Jared Stidham, who's a viable starting option on their roster, and they have no second-round pick. And if you look around the NFL right now, if you canvass the remaining options available via trade or free agency, it's slim pickings, right? Justin Fields trade has still not happened. I don't know if that's likely for Denver or not. Jimmy Garoppolo is a free agent now. But other than that, we're talking about quarterbacks that are imperfect options, to say the least, and might not even represent upgrades over what the Broncos view Jared Stidham as. So that's why I think that Bo Nix has the range to begin as early as pick 12 overall. I did not update my top 50 with any notable change for Bo Nix. He was 42 on the big board going into the Pro Day, Mel. I'm going to hold steady right there on Bo Nix. A lot to like about the player, no two ways about it. But I can't tell you that going 62 for 68 during a Pro Day really influences my top 50 rankings.
No, we've seen overdrafting of quarterbacks, and you know, I'm with you. I think you got to put a number on those players. I haven't finalized that yet, but he's going to be in those 30s for me. You're in the 40s for you. To me, if you're talking about the first round, you're getting into the Christian Ponder, EJ Manuel deal. You know, Kenny Pickett went 20th. Like we say with Bo Nix, how good can he be? Kenny Pickett's almost being kicked to the curb now by Russell Wilson. Well, yeah, right. There's going to be competition. I don't get that. We'll get to that in a second. I understand the reason for doing it, but you've got a 24-year-old quarterback. I remember Kenny Pickett was 24, I believe, when he came out of Pitt. Similar situation to Bo Nix. Okay. Guy that I know, you know, Mark Whipple loved. Mark Whipple is a heck of a quarterback coach, worked with Ben Roethlisberger, did all those great things. Love Kenny Pickett. Kenny Pickett showed pretty well with the Steelers. Okay. Look at it. He won a lot of games. He had a winning record both years. He got hurt. He had this year. He had a couple, even as a rookie, a couple great drives late to win games. So he did some things to, I think, show that coaching staff, hey, I could be the guy, but he didn't do enough in a division with Lamar Jackson, Joe Burrow, Deshaun Watson, and the AFC with Mahomes and Allen, all the great ones, right? To say, I can't be the fourth team in the division with a quarterback that's not going to excite the masses. We think he could be good, but we're not sure. Yeah. And we need to maybe not just hit a single double, we got to hit a home run. And if Russell Wilson and McKee kind of recreate and get him back to those Seattle glory days, then I agree with the move. It's going to be interesting dynamic to see how Pickett and Wilson fare in terms of, this a competition? Is it a battle? What happens? It's going to be really fascinating to see how this all plays out.
Yeah, we'll revisit that one in just a little bit more, just to clean up some thoughts on the Oregon Pro Day, Mel. Mm-hmm. I mentioned, I think I've kind of stayed in my case on Bo Nix, I do think, and whether this is the right way for teams to evaluate players or not, I do think the next 6 weeks will be very favorable to Bo Nix during the pre-draft process when he's meeting with coaches who will be blown away by his football intellect. I mean, he's incredibly bright. He talked about how maybe his greatest strength is his processing, and coaches, scouts that were there agreed with Bo's assessment of that processing ability. So I do think he will have the chance to woo teams during private meetings and pre-draft visits. And it won't surprise me if there are people that are enamored by Bo Nix, but in terms of what I've been able to see on the tape, my assessment of him stays stagnant. Player 42 for now, could certainly adjust a few spots over the next 6 weeks before the draft.
I'll tell you, I'll finish it off with this. If Will Levis is a second round pick, there's no way Bo Nix can be a first round pick. I mean, there's no way. I mean, it's not even close. So, yeah. I mean, so if you're going to push Will Levis into the second round, I mean, as one of my top 5-6 players in the draft, Bo Nix is even close to that. Bo Nix goes in the first round. It goes against everything that my rating, and I could be wrong. We could be wrong on this. Bo Nix could end up being a Kirk Cousins type quarterback in the NFL. We thought Kenny Pickett maybe could. We don't know that yet. That's kind of where we think some of these quarterbacks can get to. We always talk about Kirk as that guy. We're all looking to Kirk Cousins as that guy. Yep. Maybe they can become. But in terms of Bo Nix, I'm with you. I do not feel that he's a first round quarterback. We'll see come late April if he is. I got a mock coming out on Tuesday. A lot of calls to make. We'll see if guys concur with the projections or feel he's a one or a two. We'll see what happens. Yeah.
I can't wait to see how that one shakes out next week. A few last thoughts from the Oregon Pro Day. Troy Franklin, the wide receiver, very fast, ran a 4.47 at the combine. He did not run the 40 again at the Oregon Pro Day. He looks steadier, though, catching the football, Mel. We talked about how during the gauntlet drill last week when we were doing the show, kind of weaving a little bit, you know, the goal of that gauntlet drill is to both catch every pass and stay on a straight line. Franklin, though, is a long, lanky wide receiver who someone who's looking for speed is going to draft, I think, at some point in the first two rounds. And then a couple of the thoughts for future years. Well, I guess one more for 2024. Jackson Powers Johnson is a house. He's like a small Marriott, Mel. He is the center, who, of course, could go in the first round. Incredibly large human. If you're looking, you know, we see centers who get drafted early at, you know, 6'2.5", 300 pounds. I mean, he's 6'3.5", 330 plus pounds, Mel. He is a massive, massive man. And while it's too early to be thinking fully about 2025, Terrence Ferguson, the tight end from the Ducks, if he had declared this year, Mel, I think he might have had a chance to be the second tight end drafted. He had an unbelievable workout on the field as Bo was throwing to guys both draft eligible and not draft eligible. He caught everything. He is big. He's smooth. He's athletic. So file that name away for the 2025 draft class. Terrence Ferguson, a big imposing tight end at Oregon, hails from the Denver area. Absolutely impressive looking young man. So let's get to the free agency stuff now, Mel. Let's go back to where you were just discussing.
Yep.
And that's Russell Wilson and the Steelers. Your thoughts? So it's a one-year deal, Mel. I guess it technically hasn't been processed with the league because Russell wasn't officially released until late last night by the Broncos, but we know it's happening. He's already posted videos on social media about it. And Russell Wilson signs a one-year minimum contract deal with the Steelers, Mel. So just to sort of expand your thoughts on what you say.
Couple things. I think the pressure that they feel to get closer to Lamar and Burrow. And of course, Watson, we got to see, can he recreate what we saw in Houston? He hasn't done it yet. Okay. So right now they feel like, okay, we can catch Cleveland in terms of a quarterback with Russell Wilson. We're trying to do the same thing they're doing in Cleveland with Watson. We're going to try to do with Russell, right? He's going to be with 36 years of age. It comes to the Steelers and a team that I think felt like Kenny Pickett is going to be maybe a good quarterback. We've seen some glimpses of some really good stuff with Kenny, but I don't have a problem in the league the way it is right now. The most important position in sports is quarterback in the NFL. In the AFC, it's not just the division, it's the league, it's the AFC in general. You got to try to take every chance. If Russell's the guy, great. If Kenny's the guy, great. Getting options when you get in that cheap field and Denver's paying the majority of it, it's like Billy Beane said, they're paying, the Yankees are paying you to play against them. All right. Remember that whole story of Moneyball?
Of course,
and that's what we're talking about here. Denver's paying you to play against them, maybe, right? So the bottom line is for Russell Wilson, I don't have a problem with that. I just feel like, do we know for sure right now going in that he's going to be the guy? No, we don't. We got to see if he can evolve into that Russell Wilson that had all those great moments and should have won a couple Super Bowls, won one, should have won two in Seattle, right? We'll see. But I think the pressure on all those teams feel that aren't where those other teams are at quarterback. And we know who they are.
Yeah.
That the pressure to get to close that gap is immense. And if you can't close that gap, you have no shot. So I'm saying to you, Field, you put Kenny Pickett, they're the fourth team in division. They'll have much of a shot, right?
Right.
Russell Wilson, they're still fourth, but maybe they're third. They're not going to get to one or two, but they close the gap a little bit more. So it's going to be really interesting to see if with Arthur Smith, new coordinator, right? And they're going to get some players around the quarterback coming in. Then all of a sudden now, can Wilson or Pickett be the guy to get the Steelers where they want to go? I don't have a problem with it. The money, the fact that you got to keep rolling, you got to keep bringing in option after option. If this one fails or he's not good enough, bring somebody else in to compete. I had no issue with that. I thought, though, I didn't see when I looked at it initially, I didn't see Russell Wilson as a Steeler. But after thinking about it over the last 6-7 days, I get it.
I mean, it's basically a no-risk move, right? Now, the financials are such that there's no real downside to this Russell Wilson signing for the Steelers. So I guess it's a matter of what prism you view this through. Through the simple prism of, is it worth it to pay him a minimum salary to bring him in and compete for the job, which the Steelers have been very clear it's going to be a competition. Mm-hmm. There's nothing wrong with it. When we take a bigger step back, though, Mel, and think about it from like a more macro perspective, a Steelers franchise whose standard is not being good, they want to win Super Bowls, right? They're tied with the Patriots and the 49ers for the most of any franchise in NFL history with 6. They want to get to number 7 for Super Bowls. They've lost 5 straight playoff games, have the Pittsburgh Steelers. Now, it's important to get there, too, and they do that consistently. They've never had a losing season under Mike Tomlin's watch. That's incredibly impressive. At the same time, though, Mel, I don't feel like this team, as presently constructed, and there are things that, of course, can change, but it would have to take a pretty significant upgrade at other spots on the roster for me to view this team with Russell Wilson as the starting quarterback as a legit Super Bowl contender. So my feelings are almost like shrug, right? Like no major downside to it, Mel, but I'm not sure there's a ton of upside to this move as well. And I think that, and it's probably hard to do when you have the 20th pick in the draft and it's not a deep free agency class of quarterbacks, it's hard to find a quarterback option. The Steelers could have reasonably found that represented a true massive franchise altering upgrade. So I'm not going to crush the Steelers for not finding that option. It's just that I do feel like a year from now, we could be having the same conversation surrounding the Steelers. They must find a quarterback who can take them from good to great because the standard in Pittsburgh is not good. The standard is to be great. I think this takes him out of the quarterback market, though, obviously at pick 20, something I thought was at least possible prior to signing Russell Wilson. I'll go to Kirk Cousins then, as Kirk Cousins, and this is a big one as it pertains to the draft, Mel, goes to the Atlanta Falcons. It's a four-year deal for Cousins coming off of that Achilles tear. And the Falcons did as bad of a job as any franchise that I can find in hiding their intentions to sign a quarterback at some point this offseason. It turns out it was Kirk Cousins for that very lucrative four-year deal. What are your thoughts on this move? And we can talk about it both from the Falcons and also the Vikings perspective.
Yeah, I think it's where he seems like he's happy. So he's going to finish his career there. Obviously, at his age, you would expect that to happen. You know, Kirk's coming off the injury. Kirk's been kind of that plateau quarterback, but they have a lot of weapons.
Yep.
We'll get to it. I don't get the Justin Fields thing. I understand the money. Justin Fields to me is going to be somebody's going to get, forget stealing, grand larceny, whatever. It's going to be ridiculous getting Justin Fields for whatever draft choice you have to give up for Justin Fields. I don't get that one, Field. All I'm saying is for Kirk, I understand when you have the weapons they do and you have a quarterback issue and you have a division with Derek Carr, kind of a plateau quarterback, right?
Yep.
Carolina doesn't know what they have with Bryce Young. Baker Mayfield, kind of that same kind of guy, right? So now all of a sudden you feel with Kirk, you know, what can you be there? What can you right. be? Can you know, Desmond Ridder, you had Heinicke. It didn't work out. Bottom line is, since Matt Ryan hadn't gotten it done. So now you get that Kirk Cousins. Hopefully you can get a couple years out of him to, with the weapons around him, distribute the ball accurately, as you say, make good decisions, and they'll turn it over. And all of a sudden now we can add a pass rusher, give him improving that defense, cornerback spot, add some pieces on the defensive side with Bijan, with Pitts, with London and company, Mooney coming in, who had a really good start to his career, then kind of fizzled. He's got talent, though. I think that was a nice under-the-radar free agent acquisition for the Atlanta Falcons. So I have no issue with Kirk Cousins coming here. Now I want to say, is it Sam Darnold in Minnesota? Do they have an interest in drafting a quarterback that you would think they would? Obviously, yeah. if I'm the Chicago Bears, I'm not trading Justin Fields to the Minnesota Vikings, okay? So to me, what Minnesota does now with Sam Darnold there and having a division now with Goff, okay, and Caleb Williams more than likely there. Jordan Love emerging. What is Minnesota going to do? Because all of a sudden now they're the fourth team in the division, right? Mm-hmm. They're in the basement. You can't be there, Field. So I'm actually with how Minnesota attacks this whole thing, because where they're picking and where Denver's picking at what? Is it 11 and 12?
11 right? and 12. Yeah.
Is JJ McCarthy going to be there?
Right. So Mel, I'll attack these thoughts backwards and start with the Vikings, because this team, who, if you look at everything but the quarterback, looks pretty good, right? I mean, Justin Jefferson, arguably the best receiver in the NFL, certainly on the short list. TJ Hockenson, when healthy, is outstanding. He, of course, suffered a major knee injury late last season. They signed Aaron Jones to a one-year deal. An excellent dynamic playmaker out of the backfield. They've got terrific tackles, right? I mean, Christian Darrisaw, what a home run pick that was a few years ago. Brian O'Neill, same deal. Capable offensive line. There's a lot to like offensively that you sort of figure if you put a quarterback that's reasonable in there, this offense can kind of keep the train rolling. And but that being said, Kirk Cousins was a vital part of Minnesota's success the past few years for a reason. He's a very good player. Replacing him is not going to be easy. And the Vikings, despite the fact that they signed Sam Darnold, now all of a sudden feel like the newest, most obvious entrant into the quarterback sweepstakes this upcoming draft. They pick number 11, as you just mentioned, and Sam's contract, one year, $10 million. So, you know, whatever, reasonable money, the kind of money that says it's not a guarantee he is the long-term answer. As a matter of fact, if we acquire a young quarterback, it's also not a guarantee that he has the job for the full season. He's only 26 years old, Mel, but obviously opinions vary on what Sam Darnold is and can become. But this Minnesota Vikings team, who has been unafraid to be aggressive under this regime, might all of a sudden be the new landing spot for one of those top five quarterbacks. And I feel like Minnesota is amongst the teams to watch for the potential of a trade up, because as much as it may not agree with our big board, JJ McCarthy or Bo Nix going 11 and 12, Mel, you and I both know when there's a supply and demand issue, these quarterbacks tend to go early. So Minnesota could be a very interesting trade up team, Mel. I think if I'm the Arizona Cardinals at pick four, I'm making calls right now. Minnesota, Denver, and anybody else, maybe the Raiders, even if they signed Gardner Minshew, Mel, and saying, just for reference, pick four is up for sale if you can present us with the right offer.
Yeah, yeah. I look at it right now and say that would be because you have receivers galore. You can still get one if you move down. Now, you'll probably lose if you're Arizona. You move down to 11, you're losing Odunze and Neighbors,
yep,
and Marvin. So you're losing a top three. Now, there's a couple other guys, and we'll get to a couple other receivers in a minute, that are really good. But do you want to lose out on Odunze and Neighbors? You're not going to get Marvin Harrison. So you've given up on Marvin, and you've dropped too far to even get Odunze or Neighbors. So I don't know if Arizona wants to do that. I think the Chargers needing an offensive tackle, could move down a little bit. Latham, Fuaga, and others. Guyton could be in the mix at that right tackle spot, which is what they need. So maybe the Chargers at five could be a team that doesn't really care too much about dropping into that 11 or 12 spot.
Great spot. Yep, great call there as well. And then as for Kirk Cousins with the Falcons, Mel, you mentioned the Justin Fields part of it. It sounds like, as I've sort of dug a little bit deeper on this, the Falcons were looking for somebody who was more of a precision in rhythm passer, which is not the strength of Justin Fields' game relative to some of the stuff that he does well. If you think about this Zach Robinson, who's the new Falcons offensive coordinator offense, you think about some of the quarterbacks he's worked with in most recent years. That includes, of course, Matthew Stafford. And for a brief period at the end of 2022, Baker Mayfield, guys who are more sort of, and Stafford obviously at a different level. Like, you know, Matthew Stafford is a take the football, see it, read it, see it, throw it, right? Like it all happens very smoothly and efficiently with Matthew Stafford under center, where with Justin, it's a more deliberate process because Justin has the ability to buy time in the pocket. And if nothing is there, turn a would-be sack into a 55-yard touchdown run as one of the greatest rushing quarterbacks in the history of the NFL. But Cousins makes everything easier for the Falcons. And
hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
It does not remind me of CJ Stroud and Will Anderson last year in the sense that Kirk Cousins is much older, and CJ Stroud obviously turned out to be one of the greatest, if not the greatest, rookie quarterbacks ever in terms of how he performed his first season. But it reminds me of what the Texans did last year at picks 2 and 3 in the sense that everybody was happy, right? The offense got their quarterback. The defense got their blue chip pass rusher. Now for the Falcons at pick 8, if they stay there, Mel, the offense is already happy. They've got their quarterback. You've got a first-year head coach in Raheem Morris, who, of course, is a defensive guy. Mm-hmm. The board is wide open now for them to attack an edge rusher at pick number 8, coming off of a season, Mel, in which no player on the Falcons had more than 6.5 sacks. And those two players, Bud Dupree and Calais Campbell, at the time of this conversation, are both free agents. Pick 8 could be the Dallas Turner, Leiatu Latu, or Jared Verse landing spot.
Yeah, I think Dallas Turner is the one we kind of always had to the Atlanta Falcons. Like, if you want a cornerback like Quinyon Mitchell from Toledo, we talk about him ascending and getting into that top 10, top 12 discussion. You have to see how certain guys, young guys, keep developing there with Atlanta coming off the edge. But in terms of Dallas Turner, to have the year he did and test the way he did, he's going to go high. He may even go a little higher than 8. It would not shock me, Field, if Dallas Turner went before the Atlanta Falcons pick. We're all talking about different players here and there that could go. Pass rushers, everybody needs. So even if you have one, you still need multiple guys coming off the edge, not just the one guy. And some of these teams don't even have one elite guy. So for me, Turner's going to go maybe a little bit higher than that. If he's there at 8, certainly Atlanta would have to take him the way it looks right now. Based on, in free agency, we're always going to have things affect where teams need and create needs that aren't there right now. But for Dallas Turner, if he's there at 8, I'd tell you, Atlanta would be pretty happy to see that happen.
Yeah, right now there are some notable free agent pass rushers still available, including Jadeveon Clowney and DJ Wanham and also Chase Young. But Turner would give you the young ascending SEC defensive player of the year from this past season, who absolutely crushed the combine as well, Mel, which not that you didn't see the athleticism on tape, you certainly did, but he reinforced just how special of an athlete he was during his time in Indianapolis. Crazy thing happened over the past few days, Mel. The running back market exploded. Remember a year ago at this time, the running backs, or maybe it was a little bit later than at this time last year, but at some point last offseason, NFL running backs got together and held a Zoom meeting because they were so dispirited by the way they felt like the position was being handled and treated. All these players getting below market deals in their minds. Let me read you just some of the running back deals because there are others that either I didn't mention or have not yet been done yet, but in no particular order, Saquon Barkley to the Eagles, Derrick Henry to the Ravens, Aaron Jones to the Vikings, Josh Jacobs to the Packers, Tony Pollard to the Titans, Zach Moss to the Bengals, Joe Mixon traded to the Texans after they signed Zach Moss, Gus Edwards goes to the Chargers, DeAndre Swift goes to the Bears, Austin Eckler goes to the Commanders, Devin Singletary goes to the Giants. That's a lot right there, Mel. What are your thoughts on the league paying running backs this offseason, a year after they very much did not pay running backs for the most part?
Tells you what I've always said. Don't draft them. Don't draft them. Don't draft them in the first round.
Yeah.
I mean, just don't. I mean, you just mentioned a couple guys. Josh Jacobs was a first round draft choice to the Raiders. He's gone. Saquon Barkley, yeah, you could have Josh Allen, right? Saquon Barkley, gone to the Philadelphia team, right in your division now, and he's still in the prime of his career. To me, yeah, you look at these running backs, they say, okay, we got a proven entity. We can go get him. We can get him pretty cheap. We don't have to, you know, it's not an unknown. That's why they look at the draft and you say, okay, this year, is there anybody going to go? And I said this a couple weeks ago, I don't think there's a running back in the first two rounds. So, yeah, you get to the third round is when a Jonathan Brooks from Texas coming off the ACL, right, in November, November 11th. He had the ACL against TCU. Jonathan Brooks would have been a second rounder. Now he's maybe a third rounder. Right. Trey Benson, your guy from Florida State, like him. Right. I like Jalen Wright at Tennessee as a third, fourth rounder. So it's really late day two, early day three, where we're going to have maybe a little bit of a run on backs. So if, again, you're getting proven entities, all these guys are really good. They fit Derrick Henry in Baltimore, what they want to do. And Derrick Henry had success against the Ravens. Teams usually go to guys that were good against them. We see that in free agency all the time. Field. They hit us.
Totally.
They beat us. They hurt us. Let's go get that guy. All right.
So
that's what we're seeing happen. But I have no issue with these proven running backs. I mean, Aaron Jones didn't want to take the cut. He leaves Green Bay, goes to Minnesota, right? Minnesota gets Jacobs. It's like this revolving door now. They're moving all over, which is great. It's fun to see. But these running backs, are they with the team that drafted them? No, they moved on. Singletary goes to his old coach. Brian Daboll was there in Buffalo with him, right?
Yeah.
So all the familiarity reigns supreme. Obviously, getting guys who still have a lot of tread on the tires left, it makes sense to me. I have no issue with that, but it just tells you it screams, don't draft the running back in round one.
It does, Mel. It reminds us why there are great perils to doing exactly that. I had a couple other thoughts, though. Is one, I was stunned by it, truthfully. I really was. I mean, teams that I definitely did not expect to pay big at running back did. I mean, the Philadelphia Eagles have been notoriously resourceful at this running back spot, right? They traded for DeAndre Swift for a bag of potato chips at last year's draft.
And Miles Sanders was a two. Yeah.
Miles Sanders, second round pick, who they got great utility out of. He had 1,000+ rushing yards during his final season before parlaying that into a deal with the Panthers that has aged, well, poorly through one season, to be clear. Yeah. There are other teams that I was surprised would be willing to pay this amount of money. My thoughts on it, Mel, are twofold, though, in terms of what it's telling us. One is the obvious, which is that this running back class is not great. You just laid it out, even though there are a handful of players that I certainly could make the case for in this running back class. Here's the part that I think about, Mel, and this might be too much of a reach, maybe, maybe not. I don't know exactly how to feel about it, but I think coaches and GMs are more mindful right now of just how fast things can change for them in the NFL. Coaches and GMs are having the cord pulled on them faster than ever.
Yep.
And while it may not be great business to pay big money for running backs because those contracts eventually age quite poorly, Mel, the Eagles are a better team today than they were last week, right? They're a much better team, or I guess at least a potentially much better offense with Saquon Barkley than DeAndre Swift. Meanwhile, the Bears, better, more dynamic offense with DeAndre Swift than they would have been without DeAndre Swift. The Commanders, who might have a number two overall pick quarterback, better team now with Austin Eckler. The list goes on and on and on. I think that might be at least in the back of these decision makers' minds, Mel, is that, like, yes, the second, third, fourth year might end up being, you know, money not well spent, but I do think the possibility of getting that great utility, that great early return, is in the back of the minds of these decision makers, and they realize one bad season might be it for me, especially guys that have been there for multiple years and aren't on hot seats right now, Mel, but at least the idea of them needing to prove something this year is something that we have discussed.
No question about it. Tennessee's been very active as well. Got Tony Pollard, right?
Yeah.
You know, got Ridley. They've done some things to help out Will Levis. The O-line's been addressed. So, again, that's when it will be addressed, obviously, draft day, helping out. The obviously, point of emphasis for Brian Callahan is helping out their quarterback, Will Levis. So, again, they have the money to do it. So, some teams have the ability to, you know, delve into free agency. And when you have a second-round quarterback you hit on, it allows that to happen. Russell Wilson was a third-round quarterback in Seattle. Yeah. Allowed John Schneider to go out and do things, right? So, when you get the quarterback that's not a first-round quarterback, you're not paying the big money to that guy, it allows you an opportunity to build players and get players and acquire players around that quarterback to make him better.
All right. So is there anything else from free agency that you wanted to mention before we get into some spotlight players, Mel? Because when I think about the first draft, you know, obviously we love talking about all things, but spotlight players, this section is always one of my favorites, Mel, because, you know, there are guys who we're going to talk about a ton between now and April 25th or 27th. And then there are guys who we may not mention again after this podcast, Mel, and they might not even be drafted, but they deserve just a little bit of attention. So we're each going to rifle through a handful. And then I think you said you had a bone to pick with me as well, which you can do at the end.
Maybe. I don't know. I'm going to wait and see where you have the adjusted ratings after all your travels and all your tape evaluations. We'll get that in a second. Right.
Okay. All right. So let's do spotlight players. Mel, why don't you start things off here with some guys that have caught your attention for one reason or another in recent views, recent days, recent conversations, you name it.
All right, let's just jump right into it. I'll go right into it, Phil. Xavier Worthy. And it's not an under the radar. It's not anybody, but Xavier Worthy from Texas runs that 4.21, 41 vertical, 5.11 and a quarter, 165. We talked about Devontae Smith, 166, DeSean Jackson, 169. So he had the broken hand in 2022. That's why he had some drops, right? Had the great first year with 62 catches, 16 average, 12 touchdowns in 2021. Great year this past year. Punt returner supreme, does all those great things tremendously well. Look at the what he did against, game after game, phenomenal game, even as a freshman, a true freshman. What's he? An 18-year-old true freshman. I got it right here, Phil. This is what impresses me. Right out of high school, 18-year-old true freshman, 2021, Kansas. He had 14 catches, 152, three touchdowns. Oklahoma, 9 for 261, two touchdowns. Texas Tech, 5 for 103 touchdowns as an 18-year-old freshman. Then the broken hand, then the great year this past year. I'll tell you what, I went back and I looked at some games I had taped from the field. He's near the sideline. And instead of trying to get out of bounds ASAP to avoid a hit, he's coming back and he's putting it going right into the defensive back, right? He is a physical 165. He is not a track guy playing football. His speed translates to the field very well.
Yeah.
I look at him and I say, boy, Brian Thomas Jr., LSU, Xavier Worthy. When we get past Marvin Harrison Jr., Romo Dunze, and Malik Nabers, who's wide receiver four? Why isn't it Xavier Worthy from Texas? Why isn't it? Now, if it is, I'm going to have my new ratings board coming out tomorrow. He's got to be 11, 12, 13, 14 on the ratings board. Got to be for me if I'm talking about him in that stratosphere. So I'm going to put him 11, 12, 13, 14 on the big board field. Where do you have him right now, pal?
Is this the bone you're going to pick? Because we have a big disagreement, it seems like. All right. He was 40 or 41. I believe 41 in the most recent top 50, which is not that old now. So this was after the combine.
Yep.
Everything you said is fair. My biggest question with Xavier Worthy is how is he going to be able to handle when guys get physical with him? And I know what you're going to tell me.
Move
he
him
can't
around.
Hit get him in what he can't catch, right? Move him around. You know, there are enough reps that I saw of Xavier Worthy being pressed where you have to say to yourself, all right, this is what a team that can afford to do so is going to try to do, right? I think about, and there are very few teams that can consistently do this, but the Chiefs with L'Jarius Sneed, who currently is their franchise tag player, said when they played the Dolphins, we're going to go get up in the face of Tyreek Hill and we're going to make life difficult for him at the snap because we know that even if we give him a big cushion, he's going to run right past us. He's that kind of fast, which was often the case, by the way, for Xavier Worthy. I think Xavier Worthy is going to go much higher than my rating. I'm conceding as much. When the Steelers traded Deontay Johnson, I followed up on Twitter and mentioned three receivers that should be on their radar at pick 20 if any of them are there. Brian Thomas Jr., A.D. Mitchell, Xavier Worthy. I just don't see a ton of history that tells us 165 pounds at, you know, under 6 feet tall is the archetype for a number one wide receiver in an offense. So if Xavier Worthy goes somewhere where he is not asked to be the number one, I think he'll have a very successful start to his career. I just have a harder time, especially when there are guys who I think can go somewhere and become a number one sooner in their career than Xavier Worthy can become a number one in his career.
Yeah, the one thing that I think was the key for me, Phil, I went back and I looked at Devontae and the comments that were made about Devontae. And Jalen Hurts made some comments about Devontae. He was with him in Alabama. This kid is tough. He's a baller. And when you hear what they say about, Sark says about Xavier Worthy and players say about Xavier Worthy, same type of thing. So you can't be 165 and be meek and just be a track guy playing football because you can. But, you know, he loves the physicality of the game. He's 20 years old. He turns 21 on April 17th. This is a kid who can fly. He's a football player. He's a return man, jet sweeps, all the different things you can do with him, getting him in motion, getting him in space. It's a space game. So for me, I think we'll see how it all pans out come draft day. I think when I do the mock 3.0 for Tuesday, I'm going to kind of try to find a spot for Worthy in that, let's say, 15 to 23 range, right? And that area is where I think he comes off the board.
I tell you what, though, Mel, I'm with you that he's going to go earlier than I expected, pick 41. One thing that must not be forgotten right now, though, is that if five quarterbacks end up going early in the first round, and you think, and I think, at least four are going in the first 12 picks. Would you agree with that? And without spoiling the mock?
No, 1,000%.
Okay, so we agree there. If a fifth sneaks in there as well, somebody's going to start to drop, right? Because we think these offensive tackles are going early. We know those three receivers are going early. Somebody is, do we think there are two corners that could go very early, and Terrion Arnold and also Quinyon Mitchell? At some point, we're going to see a couple of players slide down a few slots. And the question is, does it become players that play positions? And sorry to do this again. Is it a Brock Bowers who drops, maybe he's the eighth best player on our board who drops to 15 or 16, right? Is it, one of these wide receivers who might be a top 18 player on our board who goes at 23, 24? So, I understand that everybody sees it differently, but I do think there's a chance that a couple of players that a lot of us see similarly at the top are going to have a mini slide relative to where a big board would rank them. But I do love Xavier Worthy. I mean, and the cushion that he creates for defenses is just, it's laughable. I mean, it's just ridiculous what defenses try to account for his speed, Mel, and they usually did so unsuccessfully at the college level. So who else is on your spotlight players for this week?
I'm going to go to a kid who was not invited to the combine.
Guys for you today.
A lot of non-combine guys. That's kind of the theme. It's been some guys that were missed. We had a couple last week. Remember Mallory from Arizona State, defensive tackle, liked him. But I think when you look at wide receiver position, we said it's going to be 6-7 in the first round, right? Eight that have first round grades potentially. Then you get into the second round. You got 6-7 more to have second, late front. So again, you're talking about right there, 14 wide receivers in the first two rounds. Then you get another 6 or 7 in the third. I got 27 with four round grades inside of four round grades. So now somebody's get lost in the shuffle, right?
100%.
You're like the 30 wide receivers. You can't even, there's going to be so many differences of opinion on these guys field. They're all a little different in terms of their body types and how they played and how they evolved. Some didn't even get invited to the combine, like Tejon Palmer.
Ooh.
Here's a kid at UAB. Okay. 6'2", 210 pounder. Yep. Long arms. I love length. I love length because you can go get that ball that the shorter arm receiver couldn't. Still developing like that. Okay. Yep. Like that aspect because he came out of Snow Junior College where he was an
player
right away. First year, he had 22 catches, went from 22 to 32, but he went from a 12-yard average to a 22-yard average, 5 touchdowns to 11 touchdowns. That was at Snow Junior College. Comes into UAB, develops. Talk about 2022, 30 catches at a huge game against Texas San Antonio after only having 6 catches in 2021. This past year, kind of all comes together, right? New staff, all the things coming in. 47 catches, 18.3 average, 7 touchdowns. What I liked about him, okay, think about contested grabs. With his size, his length, contested grabs go his way. Catch the ball away from his body. Notice that on tape with him. Like that. A little dangerous after the catch, right? You see burst with Tejon Palmer. I'm looking at a kid has not yet gotten to be the point where you say he's maxed out in terms of where he is. He's still developing, coaching, getting more experience, settling in as a fourth, fifth receiver early on. Okay. He may be on a practice squad. He may bounce around a little bit. He wasn't invited to the combine. Tejon Palmer wide receiver UAB field deserves to be, to me, if I'm an NFL GM personnel director, I'm pounding the table for this kid in the sixth, seventh round.
Okay, sixth, seventh round is the range.
Certainly is a priority free agent.
Okay, I was going to ask you whether you think he gets drafted. You answered that question.
I would. Yeah. I would say, yeah. But if he wasn't invited to the combine, it doesn't mean he won't get drafted. But I think Palmer's the one that gets lost in the shuffle a bit, that becomes a late-round pick that people should have done a little, should do. I would say, do it. If you're anybody listening to that podcast in the NFL, and you guys listen, do a little more work on Tejon Palmer.
Tejon Palmer, there you have it. Mel has given you homework for the next 6 weeks here. A couple more names. Mel, let's rip. I think you actually have a handful of names left over. But
I'll go with Faye. Hey, I like Troy.
The same school.
Troy. Troy, to me, with Kamani Vidal, the running back.
Yeah,
I like little fire plugs. He's 5'8", 213, ran 4'4", 6'37", half vertical. Strong, compact, low base. That means he's tough to tackle, tough to corral. This kid had 1132 rushing yards in 2022, averaged 4.9 a carry. Jumped to 1661 with a 5.6 average. Has 24 touchdowns the last year. And 92, count them, field. 92 career receptions out of the backfield.
Wow.
Kansas State, he had that 46-yard run against the Wildcats. Yep. App State, he had 26 carries, 233 yards. Like this kid is another. Running backs get lost in a shuffle, too. They get pushed way down. A big one, the day three running backs, even an undrafted free agent running back. You never know. Maybe he goes undrafted. Kamani Vidal from Troy. How about a corner?
Last thing on him, L, too.
What's that?
Pass protection. Great strength of his game. And if you're trying to find a running back late in the draft, they can get on the field early. Pass protection is a great way to do so. Vidal, who, by the way, had the most rushing yards of any player in this year's draft class this past season, can really pass protect.
Yeah, I think Summerall, the former coach there, I believe he said he's the best pass protecting blocking running back he'd ever coached.
Correct. Yep.
And, so, you know, Summerall,
how's that first stamp of approval?
Former linebacker in Kentucky. So this kid, this guy knows. Summerall knows. So you're right. I saw that comment, and it is accurate. Reddy Stewart is the defensive back.
There we go.
Reddy Stewart had 7 interceptions the last 2 years. Love the playmaking ability and the ball skills. Played slot and outside. 15 pass breakups as well the last 2 years. Hard worker, instinctive experience, right? Anticipation, awareness, opportunistic. It's all my notes when I watch this kid play. Yep. I think Reddy Stewart, another non-combine, not invited to the combine.
Yeah.
I liked what I saw as a late round guy. I think he's got his chance. Now I'm going to go to a receiver field that is, to me, if he gets past the fourth, fifth round, I would be surprised. So I'm going to be, when we're on sitting outside somewhere in Detroit in day three, and I'm watching you and Matt and all the guys and Lewis, and you're all doing your thing. I'm going to be waiting for my guy, Anthony Gould, to come off the board.
Yeah,
Anthony
there you
from
go.
Oregon State. Okay. 5'8 and a half, 175, strong compound, 4.39. Okay. He had a 39 and a half vertical. His 10 yard time was the exact same 10 yard time as who field? Xavier Worthy.
How about that? Is that right?
All right.
Yeah.
You talk about a guy, I talked about Xavier, the reverses, the jet sweeps, all that. Punt return ability. In 2022, he averaged 18.3 on 14 returns with 2 touchdowns. This past year, 16.1 average. Okay, on 7 returns. Huge games against San Diego State, Cal, UCLA, and Oregon. Went from 27 catches to 44. 17-yard average in 2022, 16.3 this past year. I like, and I've always called them, diminutive dynamos. Anthony Gould, Oregon State, punt returner, receiver, heck of a football player, played with multiple quarterbacks there. Still didn't affect him. He was out there making plays. Dadrian Taylor Demerson.
Yeah, here we go.
Texas.
Here's your guy.
4'4", 38 vertical. Who cares? What kind of player is he, right? Dadrian is impactful. What I love, running back in high school in Oklahoma City, right?
That's right.
He was a running back. He had 1365 in 2018, 1977 in 27. That's a ton of rushing yards in 2 years. He had 66th rushing touchdowns. Somehow, some way, he's not recruited by any of the powers. He was recruited and went to Texas Tech. He was recruited by, and this tells you how smart he is. He's a well-spoken kid. He'll be coming in. He adjusted from running back to the safety spot right away at Texas Tech. Smart kid. Recruited by Air Force and Army.
Huh.
Think about that. Recruited by Air Force and goes to Texas Tech. Running back, turn safety. Okay, look at the development of this kid over the years. Over the last 3 years, he had 62, 72, 73 tackles. This past year against Oregon, 12 total tackles, 11 solos, 9 against Kansas State, 2 picks against TCU. My notes on him, that's 10 interceptions the last 3 years, right? Okay, at Texas Tech. 7 tackles for loss the last 2 years, 23 pass breakups the last 3 years. Ball skills, excellent. Speed to the football, translated from that to that 4-4-1. We saw that translate to the field. Around the action all the time.
Yep.
Throws his body around and he lays some big hits out there, which, you know, don't want to always do because it results in some penalties. I like the fact. Smart running back turned safety. Great workout, great year, does all the things you want. I right now think, what do you think? Third, fourth, fifth round area. I'll define it a little more as we move forward, but he's got to be late day two, early to mid day three at the worst.
That's where I said, Mel. I had him as a fourth round safety in my most recent update of my overall big board, which I don't know that I will ever have on ESPN.com. It might eventually make it there, but for now, it's the thing that I work off of on my computer here. Fourth round was where I had him, Mel. But just a reminder, by the way, the feedback, I always remind myself of this, and I always get this feedback when talking to people around the league about various players, is that field, hey, after like the first, you know, maybe two rounds, it's all so subjective, right? So like there might be teams that have a third round grade on him. There might be teams that have a fifth round grade on him. I have a safety I'll talk about in a moment that I could see being in a variety of different spots in teams' eyes. But I happen to think very highly of as a player.
I got one more field before I let you, before you
go. No, I forgot one guy. You got one more.
One more. Xavier Weaver, another wide receiver out of Colorado. Okay. Yep. Comes to Colorado from where? South Florida, where he put up really good numbers at South Florida. Love what he did. When I watched this kid, you talk about a guy, productive player, week in and week out.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It was 180, 170 on 180 in that area. He was 169 at the combine. He's put a little weight on. He talked about that. But I love, how about Xavier? Is Xavier Worthy, Xavier Leggett, Xavier Weaver. Got Xaviers are wild this year, right? Okay. But this kid, I thought Florida game in 2022, he had 8 catches. Florida game in 2021, 2 for 68. That when he was with South Florida. So he did it against the Gators when he was with South Florida. Did it this past year with 53 catches, 6 touchdowns, 68 catches, 6 touchdowns, what a 14-yard average. Had a huge game against Nebraska, had a huge game against Oregon, TCU, doesn't match Stanford. The production was there. I'd like to add a little weight, a little stronger, but he's got ability after the catch, adjusted the poorly thrown balls, which weren't many from Shador, but when it was balls that were, he had to adjust to, he did it. Shador knew he had a guy he could throw the ball to, and he never let Shador Sanders down, who, by the way, could be the first or second pick overall, Shador Sanders in the 2025 draft. Xavier Weaver, Colorado, if he gets into the fifth round, sixth round area, mark him downfield. He will be a guy, contributes as that third, fourth, fifth receiver in the National Football League.
This wide receiver class is so insanely deep. All right, so when we say spotlight players, Mel, there's nothing that is definitive in terms of where they have to be expected to be drafted. So you had a couple of guys that were further down the totem pole. I had a little bit of a mix, but guys that I think are more likely to hear their names called, if at least as far as my board is, if my board is correct, in the first four rounds. So four guys all expected to go in the first four rounds of players that I feel like for one reason or another need to be readdressed here. And we've talked about Peyton Wilson on this here show before, Mel, the linebacker from NC State. But I've thought about it, and you can't do this. It's unfair to the process to just take the medicals out of the equation. But I've thought about this as I have continued to redo my stacks at various positions. If we took the medical part out of the equation for linebackers, the best tape from this past year is Peyton Wilson, and I think it's no debate here, Mel. I know that Edgerrin Cooper is probably going to be the first linebacker taken, but Peyton Wilson's tape is absolutely incredible from not just this past season, but really his entire NC State career. A little bit older of a prospect. He'll be a 24-year-old rookie and obviously has that deep medical history that needs to be carefully vetted and might result in him going a little bit later than his tape would show. But Mel, he ran a 4.43 at the combine. I like when the tape matches the speed number, or I guess maybe more appropriately, when the speed number matches the tape. This kid flies around. He is an inside linebacker who can also rush off the edge.
Yes,
he
can.
If you go back and look at his sacks only from the past 2 years, Mel, each one of them is more impressive than the last one. He is an absolutely incredible athlete out there, has off-the-charts football character. I get it. The injuries are concerning. But can you tell me there is a player with better tape in your mind at the linebacker spot than Peyton Wilson from this past year?
11 showed up everywhere. Any game, it was he was making a play. And you said versatility, can play a variety of roles in your defense. Super smart, super instinctive awareness. I mean, he just has that ability. He sees it before everybody else does. And that's the bottom line with Peyton Wilson. Can he stay healthy? Hopefully he can. And sometimes field, and I've seen it over 46 years, guys are injured in college, don't get injured in the NFL. Guys that had no injuries in college, come in the NFL and boom, here they are, out, right? Football is a game of that, unfortunately. Injuries happen. Peyton Wilson has to prove he can stay healthy. I wish his arm length was a little bit. I'm big in arm length. Yeah, sure. Shorter arms you prefer. But I'm thinking somebody, what do you think, second, third round? He's not going out of the third round.
My guess is, and I could be so wrong here, my guess is he's a third round pick with high second round tape is how I would describe it, right? Like top 40-ish prospect if you throw the medicals out of the door, which you can't do, which might result in him going at the top of the third round as opposed to maybe earlier in the second round. Next one, and this might be a first here in the history of first draft, which goes way prior to my time on the show here, Mel. Somebody besides you pounding the table for a Maryland kid, but safety Bo Bray needs to be discussed more here, Mel. I know the safety class is not regarded as a particularly great one, but every time I watch Bo Bray, I get a little bit more excited about him, Mel, and there are a couple of reasons why. Very forceful player. He's a great tackler. He is unafraid of, you know, coming down in the box, making plays behind the line of scrimmage. That shows up in the running game, Mel. But what also shows up, and this might be the most important part because it's hard to find safeties that can do this, he's got legitimate man-to-man coverage skills. I went back and watched, and I try to watch as many games of every player as possible. But you also try to find yourself watching the best competition games on any of these guys, right? It's very useful to go back and watch guys that played, if you're a defensive player, against the likes of Washington from this past year, anybody that had an awesome offense. I went back and watched Ohio State and Michigan. Marvin Harrison Jr., maybe the best non-quarterback or the highest drafted non-quarterback in this year's class. Bo Braid covered him man-to-man, and Maryland trusted him enough to do that. Michigan, who we know has an incredibly talented roster, but perhaps the best player on that team in terms of where he'll end up being drafted, not named J.J. McCarthy, is going back to Michigan next year. It's Colston Loveland, right? Tight end, who could be, you know, maybe next year's Brock Bowers. Bo Braid covered him as well. I think this kid has the goods to start as a third safety and maybe end up becoming a starter and being a third or fourth round pick. What do you think?
I always have to catch myself and not overrating Maryland players. I'm watching.
Okay,
I overrate them now. Yeah, and you're not, Field. You're really not. Bo Braid's a good football player, but there are a lot of safeties that have a similar grade. And it's tough to, you know, Bullock at USC, is he a corner? Is he a safety? I've gone and tried to put, I think it's the toughest spot along with off-ball linebackers to try to really rate and rank them because there's so many guys that are similar. Some are different, but they have, you know, it's what you're looking for. Some guys are more productive. Some guys have more length and speed. So you're trying to balance out production with talent. It's the NFL. It's not college. So you need that ability. I think off-ball linebacker and safety are the toughest to really from that, 5, 4, 5 to 10, 12 range to really rate them and rank them properly. Braid to me, and I mentioned Dadrian Taylor Demerson from Texas Tech. He's in that grouping. You know, we can go, that's a listen. I mentioned Bullock. You can put him at corner, you can put him at safety. Bishop at Utah is in that mix. We're all higher on some safeties than others are. I think there's gonna be a lot of mixed opinion on the safeties, but Braid to me is a guy that probably figures in that fourth round discussion, early day three. If he goes a little higher than that, it would be a stretch for me. But I'm thinking when we're sitting there when early day three, he'll be one of those names. I think Field Yates might say my top five best available for day three. Bo Braid may be in that discussion.
I'll take that if that is the case. I do think, Phil, that the earliest point for a safety to go off the board in this year's draft is probably like, you know, late, maybe second half of round two, Mel. Mm-hmm. We'll have that run, whether it's Jaden Hicks, whether it's Tyler Newbin, who, by the way, has his pro day today over at Minnesota. We have not yet found out his 40 time from he did not run at the combine, but obviously a player that could be the first safety taken. Cole Bishlet from Utah, who is just flying up boards right now after that 4.41 at the combine. And then also Cam Kitchens, who should not be overlooked. I mean, excellent player during his time at Miami. He had 11 receptions over the past 2 years, Mel, but ran a 4.60, or was it a 4.65 at the combine? Definitely at least a 4.60, which, as a safety, not an ideal 40 time there.
We remember the hiccup against Georgia Tech with Cam Kitchens, and he didn't have some games where you saw that on the field. The ability in terms of what we talked about in terms of speed and all that, physicality and talent and all that. Bottom line is, kid has a knack for making plays. He is a playmaker, no question about that. But I think when you look at the safety spot and you say, okay, where are they going to start coming off the board? I'm with you on a second, third round area. But Cooper DeJean, if you want to put him as a safety.
Well, he's a first round pick.
You said who could get lost in the shuffle a little bit as a guy. You talk about a playmaker, talk about versatility, punt return skills, talent. I mean, if he gets in, and I think the Rams is where I think it's where I last. 19? We're talking about the Rams at 19. Yep. Okay.
I can see that.
And some people were mocking him field to Green Bay. If he gets down to Green Bay, I mean, this kid, I know the people said, well, he hasn't worked out. He had the injury. Well, we know he's going to test well. We know that. The kid's an athlete. He can run. Why do we need him to work out? He's not healthy. He got hurt. He's coming back from the injury. He's going to be fine. Okay. He's going to be fine. Okay. Cooper DeJean. I don't get why we need that and why we have to define it by that. You know what you saw. You know what kind of athlete he is. You know what the numbers were before the injury. Bottom line is he should by rights field. Cooper DeJean should be a top 15 pick guaranteed, but he may not be. Who knows?
Yeah, he should be by in terms of talent. But you're right. Again, to the point of someone's going to slide in this draft. A few of those guys that are not sliding because of anything they've done, but rather other players at key positions going off fast and furious.
Yes.
All right. I think you maybe mentioned Tip Riemann in the past here on the show, Mel.
Like a block.
Let's do it one more time. Tip Riemann, tight end from Illinois. This guy might have had less receiving production in college than Antonio Gates. And Antonio Gates played basketball in college, Mel. That's how seldom he was used in this Illinois offense. He had 19 catches last year. If you watch the tape from Tip Riemann last year as a receiver, Mel, it's not going to do much to inspire a whole lot of confidence. But then you dig a little bit deeper. Best blocking tight end in the class, at least in my opinion, is Tip Riemann. He was 6'5", 271 pounds at the combine, Mel. 28 reps on the bench. You're on a 4.6 4.40 at 270 pounds. You don't find tight ends with that size and that speed. I think Tip Riemann's going to go a whole lot sooner than where if you just watched his tape from last year, you would have forecasted it in a mock draft.
Yeah, the role he will have as a guy can be an extension of that offensive line field. And they're hard to find these days because all the tight ends, H-backs, are moving them around. They're doing all these different things with them. They're a wide receiver slot. They're doing all these crazy things, and they're not a defined old school inline blocking tight end. They're not that kind of guy. So I'm with you on Riemann. I'd say, what would you guess, Field, if you had to say a round? Would you say
fourth fifth round? Is my guess on Tip.
I would say fifth. You're saying fourth. So, yeah, day three. But I'd say, as a blocking tight end, you could certainly make. If we're in 1985, Field, he's probably a second rounder.
That's right, Mel. Yeah, and by the way, this might be so he could go higher or lower than my forecast of the fourth round, obviously. It might be that a team just says, like, you know, we have a specific type of tight end that we need, and we're afraid that he's the only one available in this draft class because there aren't really many others, if any others, that have that same archetype that he brings to the table. So fourth round seems like a reasonable spot for me, especially after an awesome pre-draft process. And he's an incredible kid as well. You're going to get all kinds of character boost for Tip Riemann. Last one, Mel. And it's only because he had his pro day this week. And only because I feel like he's the kind of guy that if you're looking for gaudy stats, not going to have it. Doesn't have the flash to his game that some of the other pass rushers do. But we've been talking about him, I think, since like the first episode of First Draft for this season. It's Marshawn Nealand from Western Michigan. Mm-hmm. Maybe the most powerful pass rusher in the entire draft. He's got these heavy hands, Mel. He is a maniac. Western Michigan obviously did not have a ton of talent this past year. They had him, though, and Braden Fisk a season ago together, and they were dynamic. But this past year, the way that they utilized Marshawn Nealand was so fun to watch. He had an incredible combine and a couple of very important metrics. He ran just a 4.75, which was about what I expected given just how big of a man he is. But moreover, Mel, he had this great short shuttle and great three-cone drill. The quickness is legit for Marshawn Nealand, who beat up on some bad competition on occasion out there. But man, when you're scouting guys at non-Power 5 schools, Mel, you want to find players that look like they don't belong for the right reasons. And I feel like Marshawn Nealon did not belong. That guy could have been a star at a Power 5 school. I think he's a second-round pick. What do you think?
I'll tell you what, he could be. I always go to Max Crosby out of Eastern Michigan. Max went with fourth round, you know, and Max had the production and had everything you want, but then dropped to the fourth round. Does Nealon get into the third round? I don't know. Second round, certainly possible field. Crosby dropped to the fourth round. But I think when you look at Braden Fisk, former teammate of Nealon, right, went Western Michigan to Florida. Say Braden Fisk is being discussed as a potential late one, early two. So late one, now I like the short arms that are concerned, but the bottom of the production, the intensity he plays with down after down, snap after snap, the fact that he did it at two different schools, he didn't have any drop off in Florida State, he was out there wreaking havoc. Braden Fisk nailed the process, okay, from the end of the season until now. I wouldn't be shocked if he went inside of pick 35-40.
Okay, love that. I had him at 40 on the big board, the last update here, Mel. The only reason that I held back on making him a first-round pick, I guess there are two reasons. One, 297 pounds, right? So a smaller defensive tackle than we normally see go in the first round. He also is a bit older, right? I think he's going to be 24 as a rookie, which for some teams matters. For some positions matters. Others, not quite as much. But every time I watch Braden Fisk, especially down the stretch, Mel, I mean, he dominated. I think he had... of his six sacks this past season, I think five of them came in the last four games or last, maybe it was four and a half in his last five games. But the bottom line was he finished with his hair on fire, and that prevailed all the way through the pre-draft process. Love watching him as well. All right, that was fun, Mel. That was a lot of names we mentioned right there. You know that?
We got a lot more to go for you. We got to probably figure we two a week. We're going to have about 12 of these left.
Yeah.
How long is the draft? About 6 weeks till the draft?
6 weeks from right now, the NFL draft will be underway. We cannot wait for that already. And Mel, you have a mock draft coming out Monday, you said.
I'm waiting for your 2.0, Field. When the heck is it?
My 2.0 has been bypassed by mock 1.5. Is a mini mock draft is available right now on the website. So what Dane and Ben, who are the two great editors who run Point and all of our draft coverage for ESPN.com, said, hey, can we do a reaction to whatever happens in the first 3 days of free agency? So 15 picks are available now on the web. We're going to discuss that on Monday, and then your mock 2.0 drops on Tuesday.
I will not be looking at your mini mock because I don't want to get swayed by your intel. I know your intel. You're at these pro days. You're making your calls. You're at the Senior Bowl, the combine. You got a million contacts in the NFL giving you all this inside information. You know, don't give it away, Field, quite yet. Don't be talking about too much about my guy here. I cannot look at your mini mock because I will. Let it affect me in some way. If I'm kind of I will tell you this. I will look at it on Tuesday. Okay, I'll look at two. I've already put it to bed. It's out. So Tuesday afternoon, when I'm doing all the shows, I'll take a look and see. Because I think are we doing a podcast Monday? Right,
Monday, and then we're doing the Tuesday TV special. So we got all kinds of stuff.
All right, so Tuesday and Thursday. That following Thursday is when I'll go through and we'll talk about the differences you had in your mini mock to my mock 3.0.
Love it, Mel. We can't wait already. But in the meantime, go find all of the great free agent reaction content now available on ESPN.com. First Draft is back here on Monday. Mel, you are the best. 6 weeks until April 25th, day one of the NFL draft. The clock is ticking. We cannot wait for what is ahead. Talk to you on Monday.
Got it, bud.